Wow, I have been so blown away by the feedback from my students inside the Design Business Accelerator. You guys are giving me life. I am so motivated to create more to help you succeed in your business and create the interior design business of your dreams. With that, I am totally on board for creating more content that helps you get where you need to go faster for a more profitable and successful business. So stay tuned as we're about to launch client presentations that convert. So many of you have asked me for that. I know you want in, and that Trello tutorial and templates is totally a game changer for those of you that really need help on process. Want to know what I'm talking about? Go check it out. It's at designbiztoolkit.com. We're having a 50% special right now. I know, like really huge enrollment special. So run on over to www.designbiztoolkit.com and I'll tell you all about it. All right. Thanks for being here. Let's jump into the next episode of Behind the Drapery.
Ever thought about starting your own business as an interior designer? Join Liz Levin, nationally published design entrepreneur of 20 years, as she interviews experts, colleagues, and creatives to pull back the curtain on the design industry. Whether you're passionate about design, eager to start your design business, or simply curious about what happens behind the scenes, we're here to open the doors for you. Welcome to Behind the Drapery Podcast.
I'm so looking forward to having my good friend, Kia Weatherspoon, on the podcast today. Kia and I met about 9 years ago as founding board members of Room to Rebloom. The mission of Room to Rebloom was to empower low-income women and families in the National Capital Area who have been victims of domestic violence by providing them with design services and other resources needed to create beautiful home environments and rebuild their lives. Design, heal, grow was our motto, and that's how Kia and I got to know and work alongside each other. Interior designers instinctively understand the important relationship between one's personal well-being and their environment. And oftentimes, those who could benefit the most from a soft, welcoming, and comforting environment don't have access to it. And it was during those early days of Room to Rebloom that Kia was also building her own interior design firm, Determined by Design. Kia shares in our conversation today that those early projects with Room to Rebloom helped her shape her purpose and gave her a clear direction for her future in Determined by Design. The design voice of impact and change, Kia Weatherspoon has spent the last 15 years defying every design stereotype. The most damaging, that interior design is a luxury reserved for a few. Her voice, advocacy for design equity, and design practice have shifted the narrative, making interior design a standard for all. Kia is challenging the lack of these standards in economically challenged communities. Her presence and leadership have created ripples, prompting housing developers, agencies, and industry partners in economically challenged communities to not just take notice of her work, but to do better. As an advocate and educator in business leadership, equity, and diversity, Kia has been recognized as a hip designer for good by Interior Design Magazine and part of the Washington Business Journal's 40 Under 40 class. Kia is adamant change is possible when difficult conversations happen. She has them every day as a female leader of color, speaker, educator, and mentor who exemplifies what's possible for those who are determined by design. Kia is a force and her energy is contagious. I am grateful for her friendship and her time today, and I'm beyond excited to share her inspiring story with you. So please join me in welcoming the one and only Kia Weatherspoon, part two, to this week's episode of Behind the Drapery.
So 5 years ago, they didn't have any of the skin tone, any of the skin color.
The skin tones, the skin tones, even this kind of the size inclusivity of having the right bra, how to be fitted for it. It was a very institutional, cold experience. And these women wanted to change that experience, and they did. It was their first brick and mortar retail space. And
this was their first retail project, and they went in this direction.
This was their first retail. So again, it's kind of like, well, I thought you just had spent the past X amount of minutes saying you did multifamily. No, I said, we bring elevated design to those who don't have access to it. And in this particular instance, It just happened to be breast cancer survivors of color.
Amazing. I mean,
so
life-changing for the women that were impacted by that.
Absolutely.
Resource.
Absolutely. And my second resale project was a boutique. It was a coffee shop and bookstore in Philadelphia by this man named Mark Lamont Hill. And he told me how books saved his life. And it was called Uncle Bobby's. And everyone told him, this neighborhood doesn't need a coffee shop. These people in this neighborhood, they don't need a boutique bookstore. And he wanted to create this very warm, inviting space for this community and his people in Philadelphia to have access to dope food, dope coffee, books, and people. I thought you did multifamily, but it's really about making design accessible. Those two are my favorite projects. All my products are my favorite. Never mind. I mean, I say that.
I mean, they're all like our babies in a way, and you get to know the people. I remember the bookstore project, though. I think we were hanging out a lot when you were.
I love that work. I still love that work now.
Creating a place, all of these projects are creating community and, like you said, softness and sort of making a sanctuary out of a hard, hard world that maybe
Yes.
are not having access to, for whether it's cancer or living on a tough block in Philadelphia or these
multifamily
situations, and creating this. As you said, softness, and like going back to your creating softness in, you know, while being deployed, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's also this notion of decoration, right? Which our industry, I'm not going to take us down this tangent, but they kind of demonized it. Like, I'm not a decorator. I'm a designer. I'm like, okay, whatever. It's kind of like, but it is the decoration. It is the adornment. It is the texture. It's all the stuff. Right. That is what truly envelops people, not the sleek lines of this contemporary. Like, come on, get that bullshit. My first curse word.
Beep. I think it's OK. I think podcasts, I think I have to say if it's clean or explicit, but I, you know.
Oh, but
for your bleep.
that's the stuff. And we foot stomp a lot to our development partners. Like, it's the accessory, it's the decoration, it's the adornment.
You're saying that people don't value that compared to the architectural interior design,
yes,
real functionality of creating a space, but really the human experience, you know, the sheets that we're touching, the softness of the
pillow,
the colors, the lighting, I feel like in these industrial spaces, right? Talk to me about the lighting. It's terrible.
Oh my God. I lighting to me is like the jewelry. It's because clearly it's the sparkle, it's the sheen. Like, it's not like someone's going to say, oh my God, that chandelier changed my life. But they just feel it. I think the decoration and the adornment is the intangible feeling of just something immersing you in goodness and beauty. And I think that's where, for us, lighting comes into play and making sure there are these large sculptural decadent light moments in our project. It feels like someone just put a blanket over you.
It's so comforting. And I think lighting's important to me too, in that I think the quality of lighting, in terms of having it on a dimmer everywhere, having it be a warm, the institutionalized, you know, fluorescent lighting and not giving it a second thought, or just having overhead lighting. So harsh. It's harsh looking. It's harsh feeling. It's like you want to.
And it doesn't have to be that. It doesn't have to be that. And even one of my biggest pet peeves is we would do these apartment buildings and our architectural partner would just do this huge 6 recessed can. I'm like, first of all, guys, this is a runway. And they would just have rows of 6-inch recess. I'm like, can we please do 4-inch square or round? But let's just take it the size. And it just looked like we were in like an airport, like light after light. But it was just even small things like that of like in our units, doing a 4-inch round in our kitchens. Stop doing this track lighting that no one's ever going to get up on the ladder and adjust, right? Doing like a really beautiful surface mounted linear that has some sheen to it. It was little small ways to make these units. Again, before anyone moved in, what were their base finishes? Feel elevated and detailed and tailored in a way that says someone actually thought about this. Cabinet pulls. Like, if you ever go into an apartment building, you see that 4-inch stainless steel tube cabinet pull. It's the bane of my existence. Bane, along with level one granite.
Level one granite for the win. Are they still using Uba Tuba? I mean, good gracious.
Yes. And I had to say, stop.
No more Uba Tuba for anyone. No more.
Yes. But it was really me saying, like, well, how much does that cost? Well, you know, you can get a group one quartz for the same thing, right? No one was just, this is where the challenging, no one was saying, you can stop doing that. And instead of doing the Uba Tuba, do a group one quartz from Dow Tile 3CM. It's the same price range, but people just couldn't stop doing what they've always done. And none of the other consultants ever spoke up and said anything.
Nobody cared enough to be thoughtful, right? Yeah. And now you're jumping up. I know, you need to care. Care about who you're serving, who you're building for. Ooh. And don't just throw this junk in here and call it a day.
Do you know what the key word you just said there that always, you said serve. Thinking about who you are serving. And people don't like to hear it or use this word, but I say all the time, I am a service providing business. My service just happens to be an interior design, but I'm a service provider. And there's an honor in that. Like, oh, I'm not a service. We provide a service.
Oh, yeah.
And to do that, you have to care. You have to care. And I cared enough to stop to say, like, you know, you get an 8 to 10 inch cabinet pull for the same cost. And I think they actually came to appreciate it, like, you know what? How come nobody else told us that? Because they didn't care.
Didn't care. You have to think about the human experience, right?
Yeah.
The human experience of interior design, which is what everybody studies and aspires to create when they set out to do this. But you're absolutely right. This business is 99% service.
It's relational.
Yeah, it is.
It's relationship. It's people driven. And I even think about that from a perspective of my team members and making sure the partners that we work with, how are they going to treat my team? How are they going to engage with my team members? Like, that's another like critical component of it.
Did that stem from having particularly negative experiences for your team across these larger projects or just?
You know what? No, I remember viscerally that one firm I worked at. There was this client that no one wanted to work with. And I could never figure out, like, as the owner or the lead, you knew that client was challenging. Why would you pawn off a challenging client to your employees? Like, why would you do that? And I think for all my aspiring business owners, or even those who are well established, I think sometimes we operate from a place of scarcity, like, I need the next client, the next project, I need the next fee. We forget you can always choose who you work with. You can say no.
You can say no. I think you're right. The scarcity mindset. And in this business, I've talked to designers of all levels, high and medium, and just starting out, the ups and downs of the cash flow in this business and projects come in and out can be unpredictable for everyone.
Everyone. It doesn't matter the market segment. It doesn't matter the size. I think the minute, and this is going to sound like really woo-woo, but the minute you allow scarcity to dictate who you do and don't do work with, it's a very slippery slope of just taking work for the sake of taking work and then being unfulfilled and unfulfilled because you need the next deal and the next deal and the next deal. It ebbs and flows, but the power of choice is that is what has sustained us as a business, is me constantly choosing, like, we don't have to do that work. No, we get to choose.
Doesn't align with your mission, doesn't align with your purpose, or
they don't want to do better. They're going to be not difficult. They're going to be disrespectful, because what client doesn't have moments of difficulty, right?
Right.
Is there alignment? Do they want to do better for our specific market segment? Those are the things that we look for in a partner. Do you want to do something different than what you've already done? That's what we probe for with our partners, because it's critical.
Yes. And now you have these great relationships and a brand that people recognize and know before you walk in the door what you bring to the table and are excited about it, right?
Absolutely.
You're not having to, you know, force people to see what you want to change. I feel like this is
no. Now they get it. It's if it, but I think what's happening is we'll get new partners, and they're like, we want that. I'm like, whoa, now. You sure?
Because they say we want that. We want that to look as good. We want to have that effect.
What they say they want their projects to look as good, but we can do that. But it's like, do you want to allow us to do it? I'll give you an example.
And the why behind it. What's your why?
Yes. We don't say do it like we say because we said do it that way. We say the concept, the research, everything we did pulls us to make these design decisions. But we have been using a lot more like wall covering in our common areas. And they go, oh, our maintenance team doesn't know how to clean that up. Like, what happens if someone stabs it? I'm like, well, first of all, that's vandalism. Nothing is indestructible. But the wall protection that we're using is suitable for high use, high traffic areas. And the paint touch up in the lobby is never going to look as good that you think. Like, your facilities team is not going to truly touch that paint up, right? So we're saying use more wall covering, more wall protection. Yeah, but you know, they only know how to do paint. Yes, I hear you. But what I'm telling you is I've gone in buildings that we've completed where we only did paint. And within the first 3 months, the paint was trashed and no one was touching it up. So they're saying they want to do something different, but in reality, they're not.
Trying to educate. Yes, a vinyl wall covering for a commercial space will hold up better than, and you know, any high traffic area, even in my own personal hallway, kids and dogs are banging it up.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
On a space, yeah.
At one point we were doing like this scrub tough paint, and it was kind of like, was that the solution? Or scuff master paint. And it was like, was that the solution? Because the scuff master paint will require a level 5 drywall finish. Now I'm really geeking out, but that's costly. A level 5 drywall finish in 3,000 square feet, 5,000 square feet of common areas. That's a lot of drywall to be at a level 5 finish and then do a specialty paint application. Well, you can just put a level 2 vinyl, type 2 vinyl wall covering on it and achieve the same thing. So those types of partners, they say they want this outcome, but they're not willing to move in a way to do that. And I don't want to say we try to wear them down, but we try to hear them and hear what their true pain points are.
So that you can address them and educate them as to why this is better. Yes, you've been doing this the same way forever, but you've hired us to bring in
something different.
Yeah, something better.
We have to remind them why they hired us a lot of times.
Really?
Yeah. And that's okay.
Take me back to, so Determined by Design is crushing it. You're getting all these projects. You've hit this 2021 pinnacle of exposure that has met the work that you've done up to this point. I remember, like, what was it, 2022, when you said, I'm going to go back into education and I'm going to hire a partner or bring another partner on to Determined by Design to help you run it in DC. How did you make that pivot? I'm actually really curious myself, because we didn't get to talk through that. You were
okay. So
how did you pivot? Yeah, you're so busy. You're killing it.
You know what I think? So I had got an opportunity to teach that came out of nowhere. I went to speak at a college in 2020. I gave a little dog and pony show, and the student raised her hand and said, I have never seen a Black interior designer before. I needed to see you today. I needed to hear your story. I just told my mom how I wanted to quit the program because I didn't want to go into a profession that didn't have people who looked like me. And I was like, okay, I needed an academia. That kind of like aha moment led to an opportunity for a university to reach out to me. I was like, hey, do you want to come teach at our university? I'm thinking it's virtual, part-time. It was full-time. It was in-person and it was in Atlanta. I remember that student and I said, I'm going to lean into this. I thought Determined by Design had enough foundational grounding for me to split my time. We had a designer at the time who I wanted to promote. And I promoted her to being my vice president. I think also at that time, I think they say in marriage, it's like the 7-year itch.
Yeah, that's
it. That's a thing, right?
Are you having your 7-year itch in the biz?
I think so. I ended up promoting a designer to vice president, moved to Atlanta and started teaching. And then I decided to split my time. So I spent my time teaching and I split my time operating, and that's a very key word, operating and managing Determined by Design. My vice president was managing the work.
That's a lot, though, on your plate, though.
A lot on my plate.
Professor and a major operator of your own business.
Yes. So my advice to you is be clear on what the role of that number two is. Spoiler alert, the beginning of 2024, I had to sunset that person off the team.
Sorry.
That culminated in, I needed someone who truly wanted to manage and operate the business. Operating and manage the business is business development, HR, health insurance, compliance, growth management of your employees. Managing projects is project management. And I think when I stepped away to go teach, I thought that person was going to do some of these operational things. It was just managing. So then we still needed like a CEO and a president. Things like we didn't have HR. We didn't have performance management. And this stuff sounds pretty dry, right? But you need performance management so the people in your company can grow and you can get more work. But if people are performing but not getting compensated or reviewed, and now everyone needs a pay raise around the same time, and yet I'm the sole person getting the business, and then my payroll balloons, and you're just managing the product. A lot of have a very clear job description of what that person is supposed to do.
Yeah, it's a tricky time to grow to your next person and have, especially taking on another role. You weren't even able to be with her the entire time while you're doing that. You were saying with all the no HR and all of that, how many people were under her?
So at that particular time, we bounced around between 12 and 14 people.
That's a lot of people to manage if she's yes, I feel your pain right now.
this was the thing. I was wanting to groom this person to take over. But I also had to look at some very factual things. We talked about business is relational. So we weren't seeing any new business development unless I was getting that business. A lot of our long-term clients weren't giving us new business. We were having a customer service issue, and we couldn't establish our profitability based off the projects being managed by this person. And that was, but they were also like my friend. Sometimes I lead with my gut, and there was a clear pivotal moment when I came back, and there was a lot of conflict and tension, which is fine because we deal with that. There was just a lot of conflict and tension, and I knew that they weren't the right person for this position anymore.
Must have been a lot of stress for you personally, trying to manage this with a whole other full-time job as well down in Atlanta. Was this what precipitated the return?
No. So this happened after the return. I think what precipitated the return was I love teaching. I didn't love teaching in someone else's construct.
Of course. Right. You did say that. That makes sense. So that was also brewing in the background with all of this.
Yeah, all of that. And then I was like, why? I was like, man, our cash flow was trash. Our expenses were high. We weren't getting enough. And our payroll is at like, what, $70,000 a month. And we weren't getting enough business. There was dissatisfaction among the clients. And I'm not managing those projects. I'm not the interfacing. So it was a lot of those things.
Hard to rescue those. I've found that whenever I've expanded a little bit, and you're used to being the relationship manager with your client, and if anything goes sideways, you can rely on that relationship that you've built. But when someone else is building it in your place, I found it was really challenging to come in and try to save the day or fix it. I had no relationship.
And this is like, how do you fix the relationship without undercutting the other person? Yeah. Right. But it kind of like when in the beginning of 2024, I was kind of on an apology tour of like, hey, so sorry that didn't go well. Oh, hey, so sorry. And that was tough. But it was equally as tough to have to sunset someone that I had a deep love for. But at the end of the day, business is business. And I had built this business. Didn't mean that I didn't have love for this person. It was I saw what was best for my business. And everyone wants to do this work until they have to do the hard things, the harder things. And make hard decisions that not everyone's going to fully understand. But in that moment, I knew it was right. Sometimes I felt like it was selfish because I wanted to go teach. I wanted to go do this other thing. It was to the detriment of my business.
That's hard to, I mean, don't beat yourself up too much. I mean, so many of the wonderful things that allowed you to grow in your career have been because you've taken that opportunity to try something different.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's kind of like your house has to be in order operationally. We didn't even like have a handbook, employee handbook, right? We're multi-state. So there was a lot of compliance, FMLA, paternity leave. I mean, this stuff sounds so like dry, but think about even if it, oh, I'm just a 2-3 person. No, you still need these things.
Getting that foundation down is tricky. And so many of us come into this business enjoying the creative and the idea of creating beautiful spaces. And I can't, most people say in design school, there are no courses on running the actual business or like teaching you sort of the practical stuff. I mean, you could have the degree and build the building from the ground, but not know how to do HR and payroll. Why isn't that part of the curriculum?
Exactly. Like where is that? And which payroll provider? And then dealing with DC Health Link and getting health insurance. Getting unemployment compensation, workers' comp, like all this stuff, no one really tells you about. And that's like a benefits manager, operations manager. And you're just a designer who wants to make great spaces. And it's like, oh, dang, the business development piece.
Yeah, getting new business. You constantly fill the pipeline to keep everybody afloat.
Yeah. It's I don't know what it's, it is not hard. It's constantly a stretch exercise. I had to take ownership. There was a lot of things that I didn't have in place to be very clear on what I needed from a number two. We didn't have a lot of job descriptions. It's like, just do the work.
I know. Well, when you're used to doing it on your own and being someone with a lot of energy who's going to just figure it out, everybody is that way.
Yes.
We can't always expect them to be, and you don't know sometimes, so you're in it, like really in it.
But this is where it's be clear. I need this person to do this, 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 and this. This person, I hear this a lot, like, oh God, these young designers, they don't, I'm like, but did you show them how to do it? Well, no, because I just had to figure, okay, that was how you were. It's not like that now. Give them a roadmap. And it probably sucked for you having to figure it out yourself, but so I think you have to be clear on what it is the roles and responsibilities are.
And I found it helps. I mean, I didn't learn it till much later is when we actually had some more process going, like documenting that. Even if you figure it out yourself, to somehow document it some way so you're not reinventing the wheel every time you bring on a new team.
Absolutely.
I hope you have some documentation from this last relationship, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm sure. I mean, you're such a smart businesswoman. But these are just so hard to think of all of it at once, is what I'm saying.
And this is the thing. It's like, do I really need to check? You do. Because what happens if, you know, God forbid,
knock on wood,
get hit by a bus tomorrow? Someone needs to know, okay, I do this, this, this. Or when you hire new team members, it's like, hey, this is boom, boom, boom. So a big part of our time right now is, yes, cash flow is spinning, but what are our processes? This process. Systems and efficiency allow more space for creativity.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, yes, it's hard. And not everybody wants to focus on it because it's not fun. Or you say it's dry. Although I have, you know, some advice a client gave me or advice one client gave me that I thought was great. She said, don't hire another you. Hire someone that complements you. Early on, we're like, I need another me. I need 5 of me's to do all of this. But really, I need someone who wants to do the operations or the things that I'm not already doing.
So a part of me trying to salvage this partnership with my co-leader at the time was we did one of those personality assessments. And we had our top two characteristics were exactly the same.
Really?
they were inverse, but it was the top two. And that was like, that's the problem. You have two very like people trying to do the same job, and that is not what we need.
And yet it's counterintuitive because I think in the beginning, they go, I need more people like me that are doing what I'm doing successfully. Mm-hmm. But no, it's the complementary piece. If you're an ideas and business generating person, you need someone else who really enjoys the operations aspect.
Yes, absolutely. It's like a marriage. Basically, a marriage with people like opposites attract, right?
Yeah.
It's because one person fills in the blanks here and the other fills in the blanks there. And that was another kind of critical piece. It's a very critical piece.
Well, I'm listening to the struggle you must have endured through all of this and to kind of bring it back full circle to the beginning. Was this what kind of led to the last couple of years of your personal mental health challenges?
So the teaching was the crux of like my mental, like being within someone else's construct was the crux of like all of my mental health challenges and struggles. That was the teaching.
What did that look like? Yeah.
It felt like I was very clear in my purpose at Determined by Design. I want to make design accessible to everyone. I want people to not have to experience the things that I experienced. I was very mission and purpose driven. And at this institution, like college is a business. A private white art and design college is really big business. At times, I would watch them burn these students out. They would give them this workload that was too much and no real guidance. They didn't feel seen. It was just a rubric, a checklist. And I was like, hey, let's slow down and truly teach them tangible things that you or I would need as a person who employs them. Let's show them the basics. Let's do this. It was too heady. It was all this stuff. And I was like, oh my God, you all don't even see these young people. And I don't mean young people. I just mean young in the sense of where they were in their career path. Because sometimes it was second careerists, right? And they were just burning them out. And it was about production and churning out and not care and not learning and creating creative space and creating opportunities for them to show up as their whole selves. And it was about all of that. And I was like, oh, I'm contributing to this problem. And I didn't feel like my whole self. And it was all that stuff. And at the same time, there just wasn't true core foundational alignment. And I'm trying to force it. And I'm trying to pour into these students. And I'm so deeply pouring into them that I'm emptying myself out in a way that just left me depleted.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And then what fills you back up? You're not having the things that usually fill you up creatively and spiritually.
Yeah. Determined by Design, I built it. And the foundation was 100% in alignment. And I created a safe space for myself in my own company. And I was operating in an unsafe space. Because I'm a high performer, I felt like I could operate in any space. I forgot. Actually, I always get to choose to move through spaces that make me feel safe so I can flourish. And when I tapped back into the power of choice and I decided to step down from the teaching at the school and realizing like, you can't fill up others when your cup is empty. That was a pivotal thing for me. And then I resigned from that position. And then I was like, well, what's happening over here in Determined by Design Cup? That was broken. Water was spilling out of it and all this other stuff. And even now in the thick of it, all the kind of challenge, the change is happening at Determined by Design. And some of it is heavy. I still feel like everything is figure outable because I know this is what I was meant to be building and doing. When it is your purpose, even the obstacles feel like an opportunity to move through, not over, move through them on to the next thing. Because all this stuff with my COVID, that just happened at the beginning of 2024.
Hey, that's fairly recent. Where are we? March. Yeah.
March.
Yeah.
2024 came out swinging.
Yeah.
But it feels doable. There's a knowing.
When your heart's in it, right?
When your purpose is in it, it's purpose driven.
Your purpose is there. It doesn't feel like work. The struggles don't feel like big struggles. As you said, I like thinking of them as opportunities, and there are opportunities in every job.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing, it's kind of like the issue, the challenges that I was facing back in 2012 about whether to be an LLC or this or that. Those are so precious to the challenges I'm having right now of like, who's going to be my insurance provider for all 13 of my team members. I would take that LLC issue any day.
You've grown out of that LLC issue. Now it's time for a new challenge.
Yes, but also a pro tip. Please do an LLC, possibly with an S-Corp designation, and separate yourself from the business.
Yes, amen. I'm going to give you a high five through the Zoom. S-Corp for the win. I've been audited. It's not fun.
No. You're a great bookkeeper, but anyway.
I do. That was one of the first things I outsourced. I was afraid, to be quite honest. I was making $0, but...
Yeah, but we've had five bookkeepers in 7 years. It is so tragic. We just can't get a good one. But anyway,
I always felt like it was the system I was using. Well, that's a whole other tangent.
I know, right? I'm like, well, what system are you using?
I know. Like, well, right now I'm on QuickBooks, but I used to be and House. I've got a House Pro QuickBooks combo because like I want to.
Is that what you're doing now?
That's what I'm doing now.
Okay.
I used to have Design Manager, which was fine too, but I remember actually were you the one on Studio? You were. We had this conversation where you said, I need it to be beautiful, Liz. I cannot send these proposals that are.
I was on Ivy.
Ivy.
Well, Ivy House. Yes.
Yes. I took your advice. This was also 2020. Man, it was a year.
Yeah.
I took your advice on that. And also, I don't know if you hooked me up with Design Assisted, which totally
saved
my life too. That was thanks to you. I know I thanked you then, but let me thank you again publicly. It's huge. Huge. And I went to House Pro. And then also the QuickBooks is just easier for all accountants to manage. Just is. Everybody knows
it is. That. It is. It is. My CPA is another. We just got our third CPA. Hopefully we'll get the tax breaks we need. But I just resigned. Like, there are no real tax breaks to be had.
Say, like, we have a whole episode on all of these.
I know, right? How do we get there? But
no, we were talking about coming full circle and purpose driven work as a whole different feeling, challenges and all. And
yeah,
sounds like you're coming out the other side of this
depression.
And you feeling? How's your heart feeling?
Thank you for asking. My heart space is it's light.
Oh, it's light,
and there is, and I don't believe in work life balance. There's just life. And
as an entrepreneur work life,
it's like if I was to get hit by a bus tomorrow, my autobiography is going to be called Riding in Both Lanes.
That's great. Riding in Both Lanes.
A business owner is kind of like, this is a horrible example to use, but it's fresh. I knew I had to sunset this person. Mm-hmm. And from a personal standpoint, I was really sad, and then I had to do the task at hand. So I had to come back to this lane to execute. Then I felt really sad again. There was a lot of just guilt. And then I had to handle telling my team members. So I had to go back to this lane. So it's literally like,
right? Your head is here and here, right?
Yeah. Yes. In doing that, like staying with the bike analogy, there's a lightness and a freedom that I feel to how I'm moving, because I am deeply rooted in my person, my purpose of building Determined by Design and growing it. And everything feels like in full alignment. So my heart space is good. It's good.
Oh, it's well for the future. And I think that's a great way to wrap up too, is tell me what's in the future for Determined by Design for you now that your heart is lighter, you're back in DC.
I think so. So a couple exciting things is we have our sister company, Lucidity Procurement, which is providing our procurement services.
Wow.
Yes, we have our People's Design Firm Services, which covers marketing, branding, and identity for our public housing projects and also community engagement. And then we have a Determined Step, which will be rolling out shortly, which will be kind of our integrated mentorship program that brings middle, high school, and collegiate students into our design process.
Kia.
Very full and robust. It's truly about making design accessible for all and scaling deep, not long, not big, scaling deep, because we are determined by design to do the hard work for our people.
So well said. And I have to say, I feel so honored that I met you while you were having that epiphany for your work's purpose and launching all the things. And I was able to witness it from a side. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
Accomplished with your business, with your personal life, everything.
Yes, please. I think, what happened to our drink date? Some of your assistant tried to coordinate with me. I think I dropped the ball. Something happened. You moved. Let's do that drink date finally.
Yes, please, my friend. This is delightful.
So delightful. I'm so grateful for your time. Thank you. Thank you. Love you lots.
All right, my friend. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Behind the Drapery, where we pull back the curtain on the interior design industry through stories, insights, and creative processes that shape the spaces we create. Make sure you subscribe to get the latest episodes from your favorite podcast platform. And visit our website at lizlevininteriors.com for more information.